your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield.
Well, how you doing, Charlotte? How's everything going? Okay?
Yeah, everything's going great. We're having a great fall. How about you?
Okay, boy. The weather around here had been cool in the evening and fairly warm, 75, 85 during the day. But that's pretty good for Austin, Texas, you know. But, you know, we've had a lot going on since October the 1st. We're going to start off in talking about the shooting out there in Vegas. We just can't ignore it totally. And there's been some recent information and interviews, one by Ellen DeGeneres on her program, of the security guard that was involved and the maintenance man that was also up there on the 32nd floor. But I think we ought to, what kind of a comments would you have about the shooting right now, Charlotte, up front before we get into this? Because we're going to explain to our listening audience a little bit of our own opinions and comments, what went on there that day, that evening. And then we'll have these interviews and so forth by Ellen DeGeneres. What do you think about it overall, Charlotte, right now?
Well, Mike Adams, the health ranger, came forward with the acoustics analysis and pretty much convinced the American people there had to be multiple shooters, or at least more than one. And that seems to be a very convincing presentation of information. Did you get an opportunity to see that, George?
Yes, I did, and he's very good at science and analyzing things like that. Mike Adams is a number one guy up front, really great.
Yeah, I just started on some of his products. One's called Native Hemp Clarity. I'll keep you posted on how it affects me.
Okay.
But I want to be proactive in my health, and then I bought his other product. Hemp sleep essentials for, you know, just to help with sleeping. So we'll see. I'd be happy to give him a product review. But I'll keep you posted, George, on how that stuff works out for me.
Yeah, there were up to 22,000 people attending those fans down there during that country music festival on the October 1st evening. And so they're not shutting up. Many people are coming out and verifying that there were shooters even on the ground level. And this is what the authorities didn't want. And Mandalay, which is owned by MGM Grand International, is trying to put a lid on this and minimize the exposure and liability that they had in any involvement whatsoever in this shooting. And so last night they had a Vegas Strong celebration for memorial and fundraising in Vegas. And Sean Hannity with the Master of Ceremonies. And I watched some of that on his own program. But they raised quite a few million dollars that evening to benefit the victims. And that's who we need to try to help, you know, in the future. What's happened is that there were three timeline scenarios put forward. The first one put forward by and this was all official by the sheriff and so forth out there in the county. And the first one was that the security guard, Jesus Campos, approached the shooter after the shooting spree had ended. And that's when supposedly he was shot in the leg, see. That's one scenario. That's what they put forward at the beginning. The second scenario they put forward, or timeline scenario, was that the security guard approached him 6 minutes before the shooting spree began. And so Mandalay and MGM Grand International thought about that and said, oh, we got to change that, because it gave 6 minute liability on to MGM Grand International, which owns the Mandalay Bay casino and hotel. So that raised a tremendous liability for future lawsuits against the corporation. So that was changed to this present scenario and timeline that has the security guard accosting the shooter 40 seconds a few minutes before, and actually being shot about 40 seconds before the shooting spree begins. So there's not any time in there between the time that they notified, you know, the hotel and the shooting spree began. And this minimizes, this last timeline minimizes the liability for MGM Grand International. Now, last week, Jesus Campos had arranged last Thursday 5 interviews, one with Sean Hannity, the affiliate there in Vegas, and 4 others. All of a sudden, those are canceled and he's gone. And he's sort of missing for a day or two, and then they say that he's checked into some kind of a, you know, emergency care thing and so forth. And then all of a sudden, he shows up on Ellen DeGeneres' show. Now, Ellen DeGeneres is connected to MGM Grand International for business dealings, and also has actually slot machines in the lobby of MGM Grand International in Vegas. I don't think she has any in the Mandalay, but she does definitely have some there in the lobby of, or in the gambling casino in MGM Grand International. And we have a little ad clip here we're going to play also. So the first clip we're going to play is of the interview that Ellen DeGeneres had with the security guard and Stephen Schulk, who was the maintenance man that came up after the door was discovered to be ajar, that actually was the reason why the security guard responded. There was a door that was ajar, was not closed, and then in response to that, Jesus Campos, the security guard, responded and then found it jammed up with some kind of a clip on the inside, on the other side, where he couldn't open it from the stair side. So he went around and discovered that, and then called up the maintenance man for further clarification of what this was about. And then the story unfolds. So listen to that right now. It's about 8 minutes and 36 seconds long, and we're going to let you listen to that first, and then we'll discuss it for a second.
Thank you both for being here. And first of all, how are you both doing?
I'm doing better each day, slowly but surely, just healing physically and mentally.
Yeah, I imagine. I imagine that you relive that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how are you doing, Stephen?
Definitely, it's definitely hard. As each day passes, though, we're working to get over this.
Okay. So, Jesus, you're the security officer, and you were called to check on a door that was, I guess when a door is left open for a certain amount of time, you're supposed to go check on it, right?
Yes, we got notifications making sure that to secure them, or if they were already been secured, just making that check on the doors.
Okay. So you were going up the fire escape to get there?
Via the stairwell. Mm-hmm. I was coming from the 31st up to the 32nd.
Right.
When I approached the door, it didn't open, and it was blocked off, so I had to reroute.
Is that a normal thing, that the door at the fire escape, or the stairwell, would be blocked off?
No, they're always supposed to remain open.
Right.
And so after I would drop down and then came back through the hallway, and then I approached the room, got into the door. There was a metal bracket holding the door in place.
Right. So what we're talking about here, just so everybody's clear. Okay. So this is where the hotel room was, where the shooter was. This is the stairway, where, and this door here was blocked. And you didn't know that till you came up in through the elevator and went through this door and saw that there was something blocking that door. And when you saw that, did you think, that's weird? Why would somebody put brackets on a door?
Yeah, that's just out of the ordinary.
That was the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you walk out of this, and this just slammed?
Well, when I was in between that area, I was calling security dispatch to get transferred to engineering. They didn't know anything about it, so they dispatched an engineer to go verify what that was.
That's when you got called?
Yes.
Okay.
And at that time, I heard what I assumed it was drilling sounds, and I believed that they were in the area working somehow.
So you thought the drilling, they were gunshots, but you thought it was just drilling sounds?
At first, I think it was just drilling sounds.
Right. So then at what point did you get shot? What happens here?
As that door's closing and it's so heavy, it'll slam. I'm walking down this way, and I believe that's what caught the shooter's attention. As I was walking down, I heard rapid fire, and at first I took cover. I felt a burning sensation. I went to go lift my pant leg up, and I saw the blood. That's when I called it in on my radio that shots have been fired, and I was going to say that I was hit, but I got all over my cell phone just to clear that radio traffic for they can coordinate the rest of the call.
So he shot, you didn't even know, he shot through this door, right?
Yeah, from behind the door. I didn't know how he was shooting,
yeah.
But he shot out.
Right, so you didn't even know it was coming from here. So it's Stephen, at this point, so you're called up. You just think that you're coming to look at a door that's been blocked in the firewall, right?
Yeah, I didn't think anything out of the ordinary at the time. I came from a higher floor and came down a different hallway, a service elevator. And I walked out and I rounded the corner for the 100 hallway. And that's when it was quiet at this time. And the doors are set back, as you can see in that, about a foot. And Jesus was towards the end of the hallway, but I didn't know at that time. I thought I saw someone pop out of the cubby, and I kept walking. And once I got more than halfway is when I saw Jesus, and I started to hear shooting. And I thought at the time I didn't know it was shooting. I thought it was a jackhammer. And as an engineer, I'm like, we're not working up here this late at night. We wouldn't be doing that.
Right.
And it was, I believe, outside. It wasn't in the hallway yet. And that's when Jesus, he leaned out and he said, take cover, and yelled at me. And within milliseconds, if he didn't say that, I would have got hit.
Because he was still shooting. So you would have been hit had he not told you.
Yeah, it wasn't even fully in cover, and they were passing behind my head, and I could feel the pressure.
You could feel the pressure going past you just even being out of the way.
Yes.
And were guests coming out of the doorways?
There was a female that came out. And I told her to go back inside. It wasn't safe.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after, that's when Stephen was approaching. And I told him to stay back and get cover. And that's when more rounds were dispersed.
Right. Wow. So, and I mean, it, really, he saved your life. And he saved the woman that came out of the door to go into the hallway. I know, first of all, thank you so much for being here. And I know that you've had so many people asking for you to tell the story and to talk about this. And I understand your reluctance because you just want this to be over. So you're talking about it now and then you're not going to talk about it again. And I don't blame you because why relive this over and over again? But it's helpful for people to understand what a hero you are, because you being shot in the leg saved so many people's lives. And instead of you just getting out of there, you saved Stephen's life, you saved that woman's life, and who knows how many other people. And so we just wanted to celebrate you. That's why you're here today.
Thank you.
We want to thank you for what you've done. Even after this happened, instead of going to the hospital, you stayed to help the police and give them all the information they needed to piece these things together. And also, what else did you want to mention?
I just want to mention all the people that assisted that night, whether it was Metro, the FBI, the community especially, coming together to help everyone in need, the first responders, even the people that got called in to assist in the hospitals. And just everything puts pieces together on how everyone came together to help that night, even in the darkest hour.
Yes, there were a lot of people that showed up to help. All right, and Stephen?
definitely, I want to thank the first responders and people on the ground at the show helping each other out. I mean, I think the acts of humanity were major that night, and I want to thank Jesus again, from my family and all my friends and everybody for saving my life.
Yep. Definitely. Yeah, that's really, you did. I don't know if you're taking all that in. And I know, like you said, it's hard. You think about that a lot, and you did. You saved people's lives. And we, of course, wanted to give you money. We wanted to, and you both were very, very specific. You said you don't want money. You don't want money at all. So you're not getting any money. All right? So we're not going to give you money. But Stephen, your favorite team is the Colts, and you've never been to a game, so the NFL is flying you to meet the team and get VIP tickets, so you're going to go see the Colts. All right? All right. And then also, it's over here. Okay, also, Jesus, you're a fan of the Oakland Raiders, and Shutterfly is going to give you season tickets when the team goes to Las Vegas. You're going to be able to see them. Also, we know it's really important for you to that everyone is recognized. So Shutterfly cares about supporting communities, so it's going to make a donation of $25,000 in your name to the GoFundMe page that's dedicated to helping victims of the shooting.
Thank you.
For more information on how you can help the victims of Las Vegas shooting, go to our website.
Okay, it was a soft pedal to many, and even MGM Grand International. What did you think about that, Charlotte?
What did you just say? I'm sorry, George.
Yeah, what did you think about the interview that Ellen DeGeneres had with the security guard and the maintenance man? What did you think? What was your...
I didn't know what to think, to be honest with you. It just seemed sort of odd, you know. It was interesting that he wouldn't accept any money from Ellen DeGeneres' show. And I think it's suspect, and I mean, I think it's kind of odd that he would check himself into some sort of emergency shelter and then emerge, like you said, you know, that way. But the way he presented himself on the program, I think there's more to the story, and I think he's hiding something, but that's me.
Right. Some people that know body language said it was deception or deceptive, his body language was. But, we're going to have on our site the video for both of these clips that we're talking about on Ellen DeGeneres. So you'll be able to come into thesecrettruth.com and watch these. We pulled them out of, YouTube, and you'll be able to, we have click-offs there so you can go and listen to those. I mean, actually view those. You know, we're radio, so we're sort of limited on what we can discuss here, you know, versus seeing something. Now, what was funny, I thought, Charlotte, was it started off with a serious subject, you know, about what happened, when did he shoot down the hall, and all this other stuff. Then it wound up where they were carrying giant checks out there, right? And they carried this big check out there that was given in his name, you know, to the victims. And then they followed up, before that, they announced that they were going to give, Stephen, the maintenance man, an all expense paid of a trip to see his favorite team, the Colts. Then, after they brought the check out, then they announced that they were going to give, the security guard a season pass to the Chargers when they moved them to Las Vegas from San Diego. They're moving from San Diego Chargers are moving from San Diego to Las Vegas, and they're building a gigantic stadium there in the billions of dollars, $1.6 billion, I'm thinking. And anyway, that's big promotion.
You know, maybe they're using the Pentagon's trillions.
Yeah, I don't know, Charlotte. That might be, you know. Military industrial athletics, right? But anyway, that's good, Charlotte. But anyway, it seemed like to me, okay, my view is it started out with serious subjects, of course, the shooting is, with many people losing their lives, and ended up like a game show. See, we're going to give you this awards and this special, and we're going to fly you out here, expense paid, you know what I mean? It had that feeling to it at the end, which turned me off, you know. And so, and then also, my impressions, the timeline was not addressed in specifics. So the timeline was glossed
and never,
over.
And it perhaps never will be until there's a court order for that or something. Because the sheriff was clear in my mind.
Right.
You know, he says, look, I'm saying things to calm the public. I'm not saying things to appease a court case.
Right. So what they've done is just gloss over an exact timeline. And maybe this is just approximations just to not panic the public or not to enrage them about it, whatever, however you want to look
at
it.
Yeah, and that fellow that was always over his shoulder, what was his name, do you recall?
Yeah, there's an FBI guy there glaring at him the whole time, during all of the Roos is his name, Agent Roos, R-O-U-S-E. But anyway, so we're not getting the full, you know, explanation or truth about this yet. But anyway, that's what that basically, you know, opinion of mine. Now, we're going to play the next clip. It's just a short clip. It's a little over about 2 minutes, nearly 3 minutes long. And it's about her promotion on her own program of her slot machines in the MGM Grand in International in Las Vegas. She makes a surprise visit to someone playing one of her machines there in the casino. And listen to this closely, and then we'll discuss it.
I have a brand new slot machine. It is from IGT, and it's got new bonuses that are so much fun. There's even Cat Week bonus. I don't know what else y'all want from me. Put Cat Week bonus on a slot machine. I was in Vegas, and I went to the MGM Grand, and I surprised some people who were playing my machine, and here's what happened. To find out where you can play my new slot machines, and I want everyone to play my new slot machines, so you're all going to get $150 to play my machines, $150 to enjoy a dinner, and a 3-day stay at MGM Grand.
Okay, we're back to man, that was something else, Charlotte. They started screaming. Do people do that when they're winning money?
I guess so. I don't know. Oprah probably has some insights to that.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to
Ellen
come in.
It up.
You've got to come in and look at the video on this one. The screams were there, of course, But anyway, the video, you got to see the video. So our listening audience, come in and look at this one. But basically, they went crazy ballistic because, you know, they have these slot machines. Now, what I put up on our site in addition to this clip and so forth are some interesting articles. One comes out of the Science Daily, okay? It's about gaming, slot machine addiction linked to immersion in the game, okay? And so what we'd like to do is not only cover news, but get deep down in there, dig down in there a little deeper. See what I mean? And this is what some of the article says, parts of the article says. Gamblers, and this is a quote directly from this article. Gamblers who feel like they enter into a trance while playing slot machines are more likely to have gambling problems, according to new research from the Center for Gambling Research at the UBC. And the study published online the month in the Journal of Psychology of Addictive Behaviors is one of the first to rigorously test the slot machine zone hypothesis. And they say in there that the players become immersed and they can escape from feelings of stress, boredom, or low mood by getting into this slot machine mode and mood. What do you think, Charlotte? Isn't that mind wash?
Escapism of some sort, OCD or something, or a pulse compulsive, or not the order disorder.
Addictive
but the
compulsive?
Repetitive motion disorder.
Is that right?
I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
I wouldn't want to be losing my money at a slot machine being in a trance.
Well, let me tell you about the slot machines in Vegas or any gambling center. That is the core of the most profitable part of their business. Okay? Now, in Vegas, we've seen over the last 20 years, and I've been out there three times since 1980, I was out there once, 86, 2010. And so I've seen it as it progressed. And it used to be where you couldn't find a seat in the gambling casinos in front of a slot machine, a one-armed bandit. Now, today, some of those casinos are deserted, and they've lowered the minimum, price to pull, minimum pull, they call it, from $3 to $5 to 30 cents, okay? So some of the casinos you can pull their deal for 30 cents. Now let me tell you what they do with these machines, though, okay? You know, they make them look like the old machines, which were mechanical, okay, where they actually had the rotors coming around. Well, they still have those, but they're electronically controlled to stop on certain numbers. Okay? Now, if 777 is the big win on most slot machines, okay? Three sevens, okay? Now, what they do is the three different rotors have different chances of coming to rest on seven. So the player believes that all three rotors have an equal chance of coming up on seven. They don't. They program the different rotors on those slot machines to come up only on different rates of, you know what I mean? So the odds are tremendously against the player. And that they can program these companies out there, these gambling casinos, program their machines to pay back a certain percentage of the money's gambled, okay? And so they're misleading, and they'll say this in their publication. Now, a lady, and I like ladies because they really get out there, and Charlotte, you're one of them, okay? you along with other ladies that are out there fighting this whole system, you know what I mean? How long have you been knowledgeable about this overall scheme of things, Charlotte?
Honestly, been tracking it since I first heard about the Weaver family.
Okay.
And Matthew Gale, he was very, he read a book about it, and that clued me in. And, you know, Randy Weaver ultimately supported a family that went down and ended up in prison, the Browns. And then Waco happened, and then Oklahoma City. It just goes on and on, George. And then I learned about the Federal Reserve. And, of course,
Well, you've been at this for 27 years then, haven't you? Probably.
Well, it's been a part of my life, you know. And I, what do you think about the release of the JFK information?
Well, that is going to be that
supposedly.
Well, today, this morning, President Trump tweeted that he was going to do that with as long as there wasn't any forthcoming new information at this point. Okay, but he made it contingent upon any more information. I mean, it was a funny worded tweet. Okay. But it looks like Roger Stone spoke to President Trump yesterday, according to our information and Roger Stone's recent interview on the InfoWars with Roger Stone. And Roger Stone talked to the president and said and advised him to release the JFK papers, the last remaining ones. But what happened was in 1992, Congress extended the archives to be sealed and not released for an additional 25 years. And the 25 years is up just now on October 26th, I think, is the date they're going to release. So hopefully Trump will have those released and we'll be able to look at whatever is in those papers. And there might be some additional information on Lee Harvey Oswald's visit to Mexico City. But, I've seen different photographs of the people originally they put out that visited there. It doesn't look like Lee Harvey Oswald to me. But anyway, we'll be able to go through that and see how much of it's redacted or not. And what are your additional comments, Charlotte?
I really don't have any. I'm just learning as I go about JFK. You know, there's been a lot of learning curve on that one. I'm excited to hear that this information will be released. And those documents that were redacted but released, right, my understanding is those redactions won't be there and the complete documents will come out,
right,
in addition to other complete documents that have already been released. So it's exciting to me, and I hope it happens. And maybe it'll shift something in this power struggle.
Well, I hope so, too, you know. And we just might get closer to the truth on that. We've been tracking it for a number of years through the JFK conferences in Dallas, and we're thinking about going up there, me and Charlotte and a friend of ours, and do some reporting up there this next month. So you might watch our site, thesecrettruth.com, for future announcements of interviews that we'll be doing up there in Dallas. But getting back to this addiction gambling addiction. There's a book, and we have a click off on our site right now, and the book is entitled Addiction by Design, and then the subtitle is Machine Gambling in Las Vegas, and it's by Natasha Dowell School, and S-C-H-U-L-L, School, I think is the way that's pronounced. But anyway, it's an excellent book from what I could tell from the excerpts that I've read, and it gets into what they call they're linking the machines together, and then they're generating all kinds of different enticements generated by graphics that are hard-hitting to the viewer and the player on the machine that they're sitting at. And so they entice the players to come in on and linked with all kinds of other machines to play at a higher level payback mode, okay? And so this entices people to come in and gamble even more. So, I mean, the psychology of it, they have down pat. And it's very, very divisive and all very destructive for people. There's also an article in Atlantic that I'm going to put up about a man that was a successful investment advisor and investor himself, and threw away his whole fortune. And then ended up suiciding himself. See what I mean? At the end.
No, that's terrible.
So I mean, they're tragic. There's women that have gone in on this link stuff, this pooled, slot machine, and thrown away their whole retirements before. See, so this gambling stuff can get serious for families and so forth. And anyway, we're going to play. That thing.
Where the woman was screaming, "This is really happening."
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to make sure that we were on track here. Yeah, that thing was crazy, and they went ballistic. So, I mean, this is promoting gambling at its worst level. Anyway, coming up next, we had a Fox News Network interview recently, and they interviewed Judge Jeanine Pirro, okay? And Judge Pirro is made some very outstanding statements. We've had a flap that occurred between President Trump and a survivor, a parents of a soldier that was killed, okay, in Africa on an ambush. And so there was a flap that occurred about him saying things that were not appropriate. We have a Representative Wilson out of Florida that raised holy hell and really politicized this whole thing. And so this is what Judge Jeanine said about that. Listen carefully.
We told you she was here. The host of Justice, Judge Jeanine Pirro, joins us today. Judge, we got to ask your point of view regarding John Kelly going to the briefing room yesterday. Not only was he telling the complete backstory, but it was super personal for him because he's a gold star father, lost his son, Robert, in Afghanistan.
And has another son in the service as well.
Look, with his
fifth tour, of course. But, you know, when General Kelly spoke, you know, he spoke in such a way that he took most of us who would never heard about that sad journey mm-hmm. that the young men and women that we lose take on their way home. They're thrown on ice and what happens to them. And that was so powerful. What he said should be the last word that anyone says about this issue. And that woman, that congresswoman, whatever her name is, wears a hat, she's a bozo. Stop it. End right. it. This is about men and women who die and not about politics,
all
period.
Right. Here's what Brian Fallon tweeted out, who failed miserably when it came to getting Hillary Clinton elected. It says, Kelly isn't just an enabler of Trump. He's a believer in him. That makes him as odious as the rest. Don't be distracted by the uniform.
Yeah, and what is his claim to fame? I'm not even going to get started on him. He is as irrelevant at this point.
But he's lost his axis of justice and moral code.
But hasn't all of the left lost their axis of justice and moral code when all of a sudden people who die for us, you know, are not worthy of respect? This congresswoman that wears the hats, she is not a supporter of veterans. She has voted against issues that support
our... about 10 votes, anti-military.
Anti-military, and you know, we've got people in the NFL who won't stand for the flag. These people who go out and fight for us and die for us, the parents who live in the ripple effect of that horrible wake, end up, you know, just living lives of sadness, and they want to walk around. This woman's saying, I'm a rock star. What is wrong with them?
Yesterday morning, top story was this investigation into the Clinton Cash, Clinton Foundation, and Russia, and Bill Clinton with his speeches. Well, the mainstream media really didn't cover it much yesterday, and the president was bashing the mainstream media for that. What's your reaction?
Well, you know, this is something we knew about when Peter Schweitzer came out with his book. Look, the big Russia story is the fact that Bill and Hillary Clinton, because of her position as Secretary of State, were able to cash in on one of the biggest and one of the largest scandals that involved the United States and another foreign country, which just happens to be Russia. Mm-hmm. Now, my understanding is it wasn't $143 million. It was more than that that went from this uranium one to the Clinton Foundation for the sale of our uranium to Russia. Right. Russia now owns 20 to 25% of our uranium. Why is that significant? It's significant because uranium is used to make a nuclear weapon. And sure. Don't tell me it's just nuclear energy. You put your foot on the gas pedal and you can make a real nuclear weapon.
Right.
All right. Now, what we've got is a person who ends up in a disclosure agreement, not able to talk about the fact
right.
that bribery has been going on.
Right.
And Loretta Lynch calls him up and says, look, you can't talk about the fact that the FBI was investigating Russia and corruption and kickbacks all during the Obama administration. So you've got money passing hands. You've got Bob Mueller's the head of the FBI. And you've got Loretta Lynch calling and saying, you cannot talk about this investigation we were doing. Hillary Clinton approving the deal. Hillary and Clinton and Bill making money on the deal. And they're they're shutting down all of the information that we can get.
Right.
Look, these people belong in jail. The evidence is there.
No time on the national news at all. This wasn't covered on national news, but it was the front story on Mediaite before we started the show today.
Well, that's good.
Which is a blog regarding media. But here's the thing. So we know now that apparently the FBI was actually investigating the corruption. They had somebody on the inside who was talking about the what looks like bribery to everybody else. And yet the Obama administration went ahead and approved the deal where they bought 20% of the uranium. But here's the thing. If the president were watching right now, all he's got to do to fix one of the things that's a problem for you is all he's going to do is call Jeff Sessions and say, Mr. Attorney General, you need to go ahead and the guy who's in the non-disclosure agreement.
Right.
You know, no reason to have that anymore. Tell us who it is and have him testify.
Chuck Grassley has said, I want to hear from this guy. Jeff Sessions can release him from this agreement that Loretta Lynch called him personally, which shows how important it is, and says, we're going to put you in jail. Normally, I have never heard of a witness being threatened, especially someone who was on the inside working for the government, being threatened with jail if you say in front of Congress or anyone else.
This is the best way to get to the bottom of the story by him doing
look,
that.
Jeff Sessions not only needs to get rid of this non-disclosure agreement and allow this guy to talk, he needs to do a grand jury. Bob Mueller, we now know, is totally conflicted. He was the head of the FBI when this was going on. Jim Comey is totally conflicted from all of this stuff. The facts are clear. The whole Obama administration and the whole lot of them were involved in the biggest corrupt scandal.
We've only gotten 2 days of that name saying the name James Comey.
Okay, Charlotte. She really put the Wilson down, Representative Wilson down, you know what I mean? With very derogatory terms. And boy, people are jumping on both sides of this, you know, and taking sides on it. But General Kelly, in the White House briefing room there, made a really eloquent statement. We won't be playing that for you this evening. We don't have that available right at our fingertips. But anyway, General Kelly, who lost a son in Afghanistan, made a very eloquent and a very, very, very solemn speech there in the press room of the White House. And so we must respect that. But what Jeanine Pirro, she's hard-hitting, but not only did she put down this Representative Wilson, but she got into this Uranium One flap, the scandal that's just reappeared again, seemingly out of nowhere, but Clinton Cash, I think, is the book that Peter Schweitzer has written, and it's coming back into the news. And anyway, in there, he says that this scandal goes back to 2009. Have you ever gotten into that book yet or heard some of this lately, Charlotte?
No, George, I haven't. So I'm hearing it for the first time.
Oh, okay, so here's what's going on. Is that in 2009, Russia, under the leadership of Putin, made a concerted effort through payoffs and kickbacks and so forth to acquire controlling interest of the Uranium One company. And the Uranium One had uranium interest in this country and three or four other countries, I think Canada and so forth. Throughout the world, there were three other countries. But they did gain control over this, and about $145 million winds up in the Clinton Foundation. So what happened then was that, this is a scandalous, a pay-for-play type of situation. And it was coded over by the... What happened was the FBI were aware of these scandals that were going and the payoffs and so forth, because they had an informant that was dealing with most of the people, or many of the people involved in this. But the FBI never informed so they could alert the people that made the final decision on approving this final Uranium One purchase by Russia. Now, who was sitting
that
on...
It sounds like colluding with Russians, George. Is that what you're getting at?
What we have basically here is that the Democrats with Hillary and Eric Holder and several other people, and Mueller was the FBI director at the time, were actually colluding with the Russians to cover up this transaction or approve it, one thing or the other. And they're claiming that some of these people didn't know, see, that were sitting on the committee to approve this purchase of uranium one by the Russians, a controlling interest in what they finally ended up doing, see. But anyway, $145 million ends up in the Clinton Foundation. And so we have a new scandal that's, you know, catching fire again, see. And so they can't deny this. Now, what's happened just in the last few days, the whistleblower has been, his name has been kept secret and out of this all this time. He tried to bring a civil lawsuit in this area a number of years ago, but he had signed a non-disclosure agreement with the Justice Department, and the Justice Department threatened to take him and put him in prison if he violated that agreement. Okay? So that kept him quiet for a number of years until now. Now he's trying to come forward and alert the American public about what went on in 2009 and 10 on this Russian, you could say, scandal and purchase of uranium one controlling interest. So just recently, Senator Grassley has invited this whistleblower. We don't have a name. Attorney Tusing is representing him in Washington D.C. So Tusing is coming forward and she's a spokesman for him. That she's his attorney. And so we're getting some Senator Grassley, heading up as chair of the Judiciary Committee, has invited this whistleblower to speak and to testify before the Judiciary Committee. So it looks like the whole lid's coming off of this thing, and that means all those people that are concerned, okay, and investigating President Trump for collusion with the Russians were the ones that were colluding with the Russians back in 2009 and 10. So it's sort of flipped on them, you know what I mean? And they don't know what to do on this. But the press is beginning to have traction now, and it's not going away. So it looks like that this thing could do some very, very serious harm to Clinton and all these other people that were involved. So anyway,
right, George. Remind me, when is Davos and the Bilderbergs? When are they meeting again?
Well, they usually meet in June of every year. Yeah, either the end of May into June, the first week in June. They met this last year in Chantilly, at the Westfields Marriott there. And right outside of Washington is Chantilly, Virginia. And the problem with that meeting, McMaster's, who is our security head of our the chief security advisor to national security advisor to Trump, was there at the meeting. Now we have on good reliable, you could say, sources. We have that McMaster's is tied back to General Petraeus, who sits on the steering committee of the Bilderberg Group. This time, McMaster's was there at the Bilderberg meeting, and Petraeus also. So they're tied into the Bilderberg Group, and they've surrounded President Trump with some of the worst people around, we believe, in our opinion, me and other people that have looked at this. And so he's being surrounded by too many military industrial type of connected people, and they're connected to the Bilderberg group also. So it doesn't bode well for what Trump is up against. That's why there's not good press coming out of any of the mainstream media. Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so we're seeing. We're seeing. Lawrence Lessig, who I interviewed a number of years ago on term limits, he had written a book on that, is a professor out of Harvard, and he put forward an article about how possibly President Trump could be replaced with Hillary. Are you kidding me? You know, and they're all into Move On and all this other liberal democratic fronts, okay, that George Soros in many cases is backing and financing. And so it's just a quagmire in a maze of just very despicable ideas and you know, irrational people, really, what we're having put forward opinions, you know, about taking down Trump and Trump disappearing and maybe we can get him on an impeachment charge and all this other. And then we have that representative, you know, Wilson, that derogatory about what Trump supposedly said to a widow of one of the soldiers that died, or parents actually in this case. And so it goes on and on. We do have one a closing clip for you to listen to. ABC News was reporting this. Presidents Obama and Bush spoke recently, and they said many derogatory things about President Trump. So listen to that right now. This is just a short clip, and then we'll discuss it.
Two former presidents also making headlines this morning, both George W. Bush and Barack Obama, rebuking President Trump without mentioning him by name, sounding the alarm on the deep divisions they see in our country right now. Our senior congressional correspondent Mary Bruce is at the White House with a story. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, George. Well, for months, Presidents Obama and Bush have avoided weighing in on the day-to-day politics of the Trump administration, but now they're delivering a 1-2 punch. And while neither of the former presidents mentioned the current president directly, they didn't have to. President Obama is stepping back into the political spotlight and back into the fray.
Our politics just seems so divided and so angry and so nasty.
At a campaign event overnight in Virginia, the former president never uttered the words Donald Trump, but his target was clear.
We've got folks who are deliberately trying to make folks angry, to demonize people who have different ideas, to get the base all riled up because it provides a short-term tactical advantage.
Also throwing down the gauntlet, George W. Bush in a blistering takedown Thursday.
Bigotry seems emboldened. Our politics seems more vulnerable to conspiracy theories and outright fabrication. We've seen our discourse degraded by casual cruelty. At times it can seem like the forces pulling us apart are stronger than the forces binding us together.
And he was adamant on some issues, there is no wiggle room.
Bigotry or white supremacy in any form is blasphemy against the American creed.
Now, don't expect this to become a regular thing. President Obama doesn't have any more campaign appearances scheduled for this year, and President Bush, George, isn't expected to weigh in again anytime soon.
Okay, Charlotte, one interesting thing about this is that Obama says that Trump is divisive. You know what I mean? Well, Trump,
right.
Obama was the most divisive president we've had in years, okay? And he was using Alinsky type of, you know, techniques. And then old Bush is talking about bigotry or whatever. They never said his name in their speeches, by the way. But everyone knew at the, you know, at these meetings and so forth who they were talking about, see. So, I mean, we're getting this kind of propaganda put out by the mainstream media all the time. And it's beginning to take a toll on Trump to the general public. They begin to believe some of this stuff because they're hammering away and being so consistent with it. But anyway, we have about 4 or 5 minutes left, Charlotte. And do you have any closing ideas or comments on what we've been discussing tonight?
Not particularly. I've been focused around watching the beautiful fall weather. The leaves are changing up here in the Midwest, and they've got to be changing in other parts of the country. It's got to be gorgeous right now.
Yeah, well, here, the weather around Austin is also very nice. And, you know, this is the fall season. And it's football season. And I think Texas is playing Oklahoma State right now. And so they're out there at Memorial Stadium, Darrell K. Royal Memorial Stadium playing. And we'll have to see how that resolves. But they played earlier.
Right.
In the afternoon.
Will ask you this.
What that?
I will ask you this, George. Have you heard any more about the eyewitnesses' reactions to what happened? Did the FBI put a lid on everybody?
No. There are so many people there. There were 22,000 fans there at that concert, that festival, October the 1st that evening. That they can't close up everybody, okay? But I've noticed, though, early on, you would go to YouTube and review video up there of someone testifying to multiple shooters. You go back there to try to get that same video, it's gone. Okay? So they are taking off some of the videos that would state were eyewitnesses that that there were multiple shooters. We've had a few, five or six people that were there that have died since the festival also. Okay? We had one lady about 28 years old that was going to go out and start a group about trying to publicize the fact about multiple shooters. Well, she passed away within days of this festival. Okay? Of course, they're alluding that to some kind of a problem that she had, a medical problem. But we've had about four or five others that have died, you know, from different causes, that were eyewitnesses to multiple shooters. We've had people that testified seeing multiple shooters on the ground. We have video of one multiple shooter that went out on the video, you know, I can't testify and vet all of this to be absolutely true. We do have one video of a shooter crouching down and firing directly into the crowd. It looks like some kind of micro Uzi or something like that. See? But it's not going away. There's 22,000 people there. They're not going to be able to put a lid on this like they did Lee Harvey Oswald and all that other in Dallas. See?
That part's heartening. That's real heartening.
So
what about 9/11? What about 9/11 Truth? Any big developments in that area?
Well, you know, we publicized recently the attorney group in New York that's forming, and Ed Asner is backing that group now, so that gives it a little bit more impetus. I see 9/11 staying there. The problem that I see, especially with this group in Vegas there, you know, that were they're country music fans, they're on the real patriot side of America. They one of the things was disheartening a little bit on this Vegas Strong last night on this Vegas Strong festival. I mean, you know, memorial service and fundraiser for the victims. That Sean Hannity, he brought up 9/11. See. He said, well, this is sort of like the 9/11, see, so they're defaulting back to 9/11 as if it was an outside attack by outside forces against us. So people are still mesmerized by that, and then they're still being fooled by it. Well, we've got closing comments pretty well done now, and we've got to sign off in about 30 seconds on the air. But, Charlotte, thanks for coming in and helping out with this program, and we covered as much.
Pleasure.
We covered as much as we could, we're trying to make this as interesting. So listen to those clips again. Listen to the program again. We'll go in and view those videos. But thanks. I want to thank everyone for listening, and God bless everyone out there, and God bless you too, Charlotte Littlefield. Love the heck out of you. Okay.
Yeah, I love you too, George. God bless America.
God bless America. Good night.